Doug Vernier is the president of VSoft Communications, LLC, and the senior consulting engineer at Doug Vernier Telecommunications Consultants. VSoft is a broadcast engineering software development company supporting a wide range of radio and TV station engineers, consulting, and FCC engineers. Doug served for 7 years as the principal consulting engineer for the Corporation of Public Broadcasting's Digital Radio Conversion Program. He has authored numerous papers, including the chapter on radio propagation in the current NAB Engineering Handbook. And he has taken an early retirement after many fruitful years as the Director of Broadcasting Services at the University of Northern Iowa. He has served 2 terms on the Board of Directors of National Public Radio and is a past president of Public Radio in Mid-America. Doug is a founding member of the Board of Directors of the Association of Public Radio Engineers. He is recognized by the Society of Broadcast Engineers as a lifetime professional broadcast engineer. His degrees are from the University of Michigan, where he studied engineering and telecommunications, and his amateur radio call is K0DV. Please welcome Doug.
Thank you, Jason. Well, after all that, it's time to quit. So that was a long introduction, but thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. On my way here, I happened to notice a marriage going on, and with this day and age, I was very surprised it was between 2 antennas. And do you know that I went to the wedding and it was just terrible, but the reception was great. All right, well, enough of that. We want to talk a little bit about translators and boosters. Here we are. This is a start with the translators. Area translators, most of you may already know this, but for those of you who don't, translators may not extend the protected contour of a translator licensed to a commercial band primary station. And if you're an NCE, non-commercial station, and if you're a non-co-owned commercial station, translators may extend the translator's contour beyond the primary station's protected contour. These are all area translators. Primary FM station's protected contours are the 54 dBU for Class B, 57 dBU for the B1, and the 60 dBU for the other classes. All translators are secondary, and they can be booted off of the air by full-service stations. And if you take a look at this, this is right out of the rule book, 73.1.2.3.5 power limitations. This is how we determine how much power a station can transmit. Basically, what you do is you have 12 radials for a translator, and you take the highest antenna height along these 12 radials. To determine what the radial antenna height is, you go out from 2 to 10 miles, and you look at the elevation, and you take that elevation along with the antenna height, and that gives you the antenna height above average terrain. And if, where is the, is this it? The red line? Okay, thank you. And if you look here, you can see that this is, If you look here, this is a station, a power a translator that is on the other side of the Mississippi and toward the east. And if you are 116 meters above average terrain, that's called the MERP, then in watts would be only 13 watts. If you're between 33 and 39 meters, then you have the capability of operating at 170 watts. Not a lot of power. Now, if you're on the other side of the Mississippi, the rules say that you can operate with more power. In fact, if you're an area translator, you can operate 250 watts if your antenna is below 107 meters, 107 meters or below. That's, 320 feet or so. That's a good size station. In fact, that station will provide a 1 millivolt that goes out more than 10 miles. And as we go on with this discussion, I wanted to Just to remind you, basically we'll be talking about protected and interfering contours. And here is a map which shows a little translator right here. And the red is its interfering contour. And it's a 54 dBu because it's first adjacent. If you look at the rules, the first adjacent protecting the 60 dBu contour in black of this station down here. That is the contour produced by the height above average terrain in 360 radials is what we use, but you can use 8 radials and you can interpolate between them. There's a lot of different ways you can approach drawing these contours. I'm hitting the wrong button. All right, so that's what we'll be talking about in a minute. You don't want those contours to overlap. Let me go back one and show you that here we have an overlap of the interfering contour, but translators may receive interference. But there's no overlap of the red interfering contour of the translator with the protected station. Translators cannot cause interference. So these are fill-in translators. Now, these are a different type of translators. The area of coverage, it has to be within the FM or within the protected contour of the associated primary station. Same as a booster, you cannot exceed the protected contour. AM has a little different rules. Not only does you cannot exceed the protected contour, which for AM is a 2 millivolt per meter contour, but you cannot also exceed being 25 miles outside of that transmitter antenna. And whichever is the lesser, you'll have to set your translator inside and the power inside so that it doesn't exceed those contours. Here's some interesting twists and facts about translators. The fill-in translators we just talked about may transmit up to 250 watts without any limitation whatsoever to antenna height. So you can have it on a 2,000-foot tower if you don't cause any interference. And if it's a fill-in and it doesn't exceed the primary contour, that is a very powerful station. In fact, the 60 dBu of a 250-watt fill-in translator on a 2,000-foot tower, is the same coverage as a Class B or C2 station. So, you know, don't overlook how powerful translators can be. FM translators and fill-in translators may run a primary station's multicast programming if desired. We're going to get into this shortly, but this is an exciting aspect and what makes translators right now so hot. NCE translators can be fed with alternative delivery, which means satellite, microwave, IP, anything like that. But not the commercial band translators. Unless they are fill-in translators, then you can feed them with alternative delivery, except you can't use a satellite to feed a commercial fill-in translator. Why? Ask the FCC. Translators cannot cause real interference to the regularly listened to FM station or translator. So that means if somebody's listening to a translator in some area or a station or a translator in some area, you put a new translator on the air or you move the frequency of your translator and you cause it interference somehow, what, a listener complains, then they can complain to the FCC and you can have to go off the air. Typically, it takes about 6 interference complaints for the FCC to act, to tell you to fix it or lose it. Right now, we're going to talk about this situation where an HD2 translator, an HD2 station rather, running IBOC, can feed a translator. And here we have a screenshot from FM Commander, which is one of VSOFT's primary FM search programs. And we have actually, to understand this table, you should see that there are 2 columns. I get it. And this is the incoming column. What that means is that there is incoming interference or contour overlap to our primary station, which is here. And this is a translator operating on channel 228. It's receiving some interference on a co-channel from WEEY. So it's lit up in red, and this is how much the contours are overlapping. So this is interfering coming into our protected contour as this translator. Note that this is a green column on the outgoing. So our interference contour does not cross over any protected contours. And you must have your translator not cross over any protected translator, any protected coverage contours, or the commission would not accept it. There are some examples where we're going to show you where you don't have to, you can have some red over here, you can have some contour overlap. Now this is a station that is in Vermont, Manchester, and its power has been set by this station right here. So we're operating 120 watts, 0.12 kilowatts, and our interference contour comes up to the protected contour of this proposed station. It's an application for a Class D translator within 0.1 kilometer. Now, the Vermont Public Radio is using this particular translator as a fill-in translator. And this is what it looks like. The black is the station's contour, the full service station, WBTN-FM. And the red contour, which looks identically except it's smaller. Why? Because it's on the same tower. Well, what is it filling in for? Well, it's not really filling in for holes. It's filling in as an H2. So they have actually put a secondary stream of programming on that translator, and the FCC has gratefully approved it. Some people have said, well, why? But that's what you can do. One of the things you can do, and a lot of this is happening today. Here's an example of a religious translator that is, in fact, transmitting the HD2 of a top 40 station. This particular translator increased its power. The pointer button is right next to the forward and the backward button, and my thumb is pretty big. Okay, so the first location of this translator was right here, and it had a power that was gave it a coverage area, which is shown here, the 60 dBU. And then they became a fill-in translator for WWMX and were able to increase their power considerably from 0.08 kilowatts to 20.25 kilowatts, the maximum for a translator. And you can see that it has a very large translator. This is on the east side of the Mississippi, so it doesn't really have, and it's a fill-in, it doesn't have to obey those specific rules about distance to contour, an HAT, maximum HAT. And you can see the scale here. This is a 10-mile or so, 1 millivolt translator. Here's another fill-in. This is one of Clear Channel's stations, WLTW. This has an interesting history. Translator started here. It was not owned by Clear Channel. I think either Clear Channel purchased it. Jeff Littlejohn, is he still here? Jeff, are you here? He must be out somewhere else. But this was the first location. And then it moved over here. And then it became a fill-in for WLTW. And this became its new coverage. And this is in a very populated area in Paterson and Newark, New Jersey, and New York City. There was a problem with this translator. And you can see what the situation was. This is that table that we were talking about before. And you can see that it's got outgoing interference. Well, how could that happen? Well, if you look at their frequency, their channel number is 292, and I'm going to talk in channel numbers because I think about those rather than megahertz. And we have here an overlap with WLTW. It's on channel 294. It's two channels removed. So we can get a waiver for that as long as we obey the rules about the U to D ratio for second adjacent stations. That U to D ratio means for second adjacent stations that the interfering station can be 40 dB above the protected contour level at any given point before it begins to cause interference. If you get above that, you start to cause interference. So we have to keep the 40 dBU on the ground, the 40 dBU plus on the ground, or we cannot get the operation licensed. We'll talk more about how you do that in just a minute. This translator ran into some problems, and translators will do that when they come on the air occasionally because they serve at the good graces of the full service stations. This is the translator's 60 dBU, and this is its interfering contour. Now we have a station down here, WKNK and KMK, and its protected contour is shown here. But notice that it does overlap, but the overlap is over the ocean. That overlap doesn't count. So they went ahead, the consultant and the station went ahead and built this translator, and they built it on top of the Four Times Square building. And in New York, you have to deal with all the unions, and you have to then have a rent, a contract, and it gets very, very expensive. Well, what happened is that this station got interference on land here. Why? Because this is all flat. So there was enough interference here that interfering contour, which is shown on this map, the 40 dBU co-channel interference contour, actually was further on and caused an interference on land. And this station had to go off there or move. And I'm not sure exactly what the outcome of that was. But the last I heard, they thought they had cleared up the interference problem. Now there's some frequency issues that relate to commercial and public stations in their move-ins. Commercial and public stations and new allocations, translators that go on the air like this one may need to move because they're causing interference. And that makes things get pretty expensive. The FCC rules say that you can't change more than second or third adjacent or the IFs. Otherwise, it's a major change. It's a minor change if you move three channels up or three channels down, up to three or down, or the IF, the 53 and 54 channels removed. However, they've gotten kinder about this, they say. So if you do get displaced, and we're going to talk about a displacement here shortly, you can perhaps request a waiver and get yourself moved more than three channels just so that you can stay on the air. And here's the case of displacement. K269EJ in Des Moines. You can see in this case, we'll look at the table again. There's a significant amount of incoming interference which would ruin the translator's protected coverage area. But even worse than that, all of this outgoing contour overlap. And why? It's on 269 and the translator's on 269. And this is an R, which is a rulemaking. And if approved, and I think it's still in the approval process, this translator is going to get displaced and will have to move. So we look for a new frequency for them, and let me tell you, the translator frequencies are very, very tight. And in the large cities, because of LPFM, They're impossible to get. Luckily, we found one in Des Moines, and this is the channel we found, and it had some received interference. And here it is, 6.8 from KHKI, and had received interference from the Ottumwa station, and this you can almost ignore, it's just not enough. And it was caused the interference, but there are two channels removed, and well, this one is three channels, this one is two channels removed. This one's two, and this one's three channels removed. Some outgoing interference, and that can be waived if you can show that you're not running beyond the plus 40 dBu amount. And I'll talk about that in a slide here shortly. So there's only one channel, and this is what it looked like when you look at the amount of interference that this channel shows. And we saw that we had interference coming in from KHKI on the table, and indeed, if you look at a Longley Rice perspective, what you're seeing here are the various colors of stations that are causing interference with this translator. And now the translator has a protected contour shown in red, that's the 60 dBu. And all of these stations are actually shortening up or reducing the reach beyond the 60 dBu, except this one station, which is encroaching into the 60 dBu. So you've got some interference, and obviously if you had listeners out here, they would be gone by you moving to that frequency. This is the old frequency that they are on. This is actually channel 269, and pretty much open. There's some interference way out here, 18, 20, 30 kilometers out, but all of Des Moines looks good, there's a lot of white space in here where the translator would be received, and it would not be receiving interference. So the new frequency wasn't as good as the old frequency. The question is, was the new frequency acceptable to use? And the question is, if you have to go off the air, the answer is, if you have to go off the air, something is better than nothing. And here's another case where a translator needs a second adjacent waiver to protect WIYY and WASH. The translator is W480AO in Baltimore. And you can see here that we have outgoing interference on the first adjacent. And this is not going to be allowed. It's not the first adjacent, it's the second adjacent. I can't read it from here. So we're going to have to get that waived. I'll show you how we can do that in just a minute. So these waivers can be achieved if you can prove that in the case of third and second adjacent stations that your translator is not more than 40 dB above at any point the protected signal at the same point, and that there are no people living or working there if you do find that you do exceed it. The secret is to employ an antenna that has a vertical elevation field that produces a low signal level at the point of concern, and you want to keep the antenna as high as possible. Sometimes the logistics don't make this possible, but you do the best you can. In this particular situation, we're going to look at a vertical elevation field. This is a one-bay antenna, and it's pointed in this direction, if you think about it, and the field varies, gets reduced as you go down in the angle. And so we're looking at the downward angle on the vertical scale. The horizontal scale is the field. And this is a one-bay antenna. This is a little graph here that shows the field strength of the station that we're trying to protect. It's about 68 dBu. This is the KSTZ station. And our translator with a one bay, its field looks like this, very close to the antenna. And when it exceeds the 40 dB ratio, the graph goes to red. So we can see that we've got interference all the way out to the 500 or so meter distance. And this would not pass muster, because you would be causing interference to that station. So what do you do? Well, you can do a couple things. You can put an antenna in that has more bays. Having more bays, you will see that the vertical elevation field drops more rapidly. A little bump here at around 50 degrees, but it goes on down. So it looks like a good antenna to use. And in this particular case, we're going to raise it up to 77 meters from our previous height. And this is now what our graph looks like. There is at no point do we exceed 40 dB above. And this happens to be along 90 degrees. Now, you have to be careful because, the land may go up in a different direction. You may have a building that's very close in, a major road, and you can't cause interference over that. So when you submit this to the FCC, you'd want to submit a satellite picture where you have a scale on it, and you can show where the various houses are that have to be protected, and you can show by your graph that you are protecting those stations, and therefore get your adjacent second adjacent interference, even though you're poking a hole in their protected contour, but the hole never touches the ground or it touches an area with no population. All right, now this is some translators for AM stations. This is another exciting aspect of what's happening with translators today. The FCC in 2009 allowed AM stations to have FM translators. And these translators that can be used for AM have to be licensed after May 1st, 2009. This may change, but that's the way the rules were set up. The commission just didn't want all these new translators to be used for other purposes. But the success of this has been significant. There are 500 FM translators on the air now for AM stations. And the FCC realizes that this is something that's important. Now, you can only do it for an AM daytime station. If you're on the air at nighttime, they're not going to give you the privilege. No portion of the FM translator, 60 dBU, can exceed the 2 millivolt per meter or the 25-mile radius, whichever is less, that we've talked about. Translator must be co-owned by the AM licensee or the station, or the translator licensee must have written consent. AM stations are allowed to originate programming. This is why everybody is so excited. Finally, AM daytimers have a nighttime signal. And if you're careful, because it's a fill-in, it can be a powerful nighttime signal. There's no limit on the number of translators that you can have as long as they serve unless they serve the same area. So you could have three or four to fill in if you needed them. Here's a case. One of our clients, KUOM, up in Minneapolis, St. Paul, when the translator window opened, which was, what, almost seven years ago, we applied for two translators. Well, KUOM is an AM station, but how could we apply for translators back then? Well, there was a Class D share time station in town that was not on the air full time. So KUOM, University of Minnesota licensee, went in and applied for that other time limit, time sharing, with this FM Class D station. The FCC will not issue any more licenses for Class Ds, but they will issue one for share time, for somehow we got this one through the commission. So they had a little tiny 8-watt Class D FM translator, and it's down in here, and it could actually transmit, here it is right there, its own programming, separate programming. And then we applied for a translator right downtown Minneapolis on the campus, and another one at the KUOM AM translator site. So they ended up getting two of those translators. And then the FCC said, oh, well, now you can have a fill-in if you're an AM station. And this is the 25-mile limit, and this is the 2 millivolt per meter of their AM station. Result, I'll go to the next slide for that, looks like this. The old translators here, it could actually increase to this size. That was the one on the Minnesota campus. And then the one on the KUOM tower could increase to this size. It's at 500 feet, and it's at 99 watts. And this cover, this is Minneapolis, and here's St. Paul. So basically, it provides a 1 millivolt to the entire complex. So they have an AM and FM station now with a couple of translators to make it happen. Here's a case, although it looks a little like spaghetti, in Atlanta, Georgia. We had a little translator. It's right up in here, original 10-watt translator that was purchased and moved to downtown Atlanta on one of the tall buildings. And if you look carefully, you'll see the orange line here is the 1 millivolt of the original translator that moved down here, and it crosses because to move these translators, you have to have the 1 millivolt cross at some location. And here it just barely crosses, and that was approved. And then they became a fill-in, and in this case, go back. In this case, they became a fill-in for WWWQ, which was later, the translator was sold or moved. I'm not sure exactly how it happened, but it became a translator for the AM station, WCNN. And notice that we had a problem with that because when you look at the drawing here, the 25-mile limit, that orange exceeded it. So the original translator had to be reduced in power so that its 1 millivolt was inside the 25-mile circle. This station sold, this translator station sold for $500,000. Translators have no requirement to serve the city of license. So you don't have to worry about providing a certain signal strength over the city of license. Translator can be moved to a new tower as long, I already said this, as long as the 60 dBU overlaps with the old one. And I saw a recent case where the FCC actually waived this requirement for overlap to a station that was well beyond the original 60 dBU. And they did that to allow it to become a fill-in translator. You might want to look up the case if you want to move a translator in. The problem is you can't move translators now into a spectrum-limited market because the FCC will not allow that. They're trying to save space for LPFM. So you can move it, if you're already in the market, you can move it anywhere. Like if you're in Minneapolis-St. Paul and you want to move it from St. Paul to Minneapolis, or you're in the TV market, or the ADI radio market, you can move it from outside the metropolitan boundary into Minneapolis-St. Paul. And in fact, owners are hopscotching translators to their final location. The way they were doing that is having crank-up towers on a trailer and pulling that trailer from one location to the next, and putting the station on the air for a day, and taking it down, getting a special temporary authority for being silent, and then applying for the new location and hopscotching it until it got there. Well, the FCC has put a crimp in that particular maneuver now. Here's a situation where it's a new rule that you can't move from the commercial band to the non-commercial band, and you have to wait 2 years before you do that. The FCC is slowing, it had one time said, well, we're going to slow down the process from 3 months to, from 2 or 3 days rather to 3 months, and now it takes a month and a half, it says a month and 1/12 there, I think, month and a half to do the processing. The crank-up tower situation is sort of limited. There's a fellow in Florida that had 5 or 6 of these down the Keys. He was going to move to Miami, and so he would drive up with his crank-up tower and put it up and put the thing on the air and take it down, and then he would drive to another location where he had a translator and do the same thing there. He'd do this, and then he had applications to move them in up to the commission to Miami. Commission frowned on this when they found out about it. In fact, another station turned them in, and they no longer allow this kind of move for translators. You can still move them, you know, one or twice, but you got to stay there for a while, you know. Who's buying translators? A lot of money in these things. Here's some translators that were recently purchased by First Ventures Capital Partners, owned by Ron Ukifer. They bought 73 FM translators from Horizon Christian Fellowship, and these translators are, we presume, all on the air. Some of them are in fairly large cities, good-sized cities, Davenport and Little Rock, and et cetera. $275,000 for 73 translators. If you're an entrepreneur, that's a pretty good deal, particularly if you can sell them for $500,000 and move them in. All right, we're going to briefly talk about receiving issues with translators. Here is a case where one of the first cases we tried to retranslate IBOC on a translator. And this was funded by a Corporation for Public Broadcasting grant. KFAI was the primary station. And in this case, it was located on channel 212, but 72 kilometers away, we had a co-channel station, the C3, in North Branch, Minnesota, on the same channel. And then we had in Minneapolis, only 19.5 kilometers away, KMOJ, on the second adjacent. And then we had some other issues here on other stations that were first in, adjacent to the station. And if you looked at the situation, this is the KFAI translator trying to pick up primary station, which is not that far away, downtown Minneapolis, on the Fauché building at the time. And but unfortunately, it has to look at, in the same direction, a channel 210, and we're on 212, channel 211, a 213, and a 214. So two of those are second adjacent. Where is the IBOC? Second adjacent, okay? So this did not work. Here we have another second adjacent off of the side of the antenna. It's, so that wasn't too bad because the directionality of the antenna would attenuate it pretty good. We had another one up here. This is co-channel, again, attenuated with the directionality. But you can't attenuate something that is in the same direction that you're trying to receive. This is the spectrum analysis. And if you look at this, you'll see the station KFAI and its IBOC in red. And you can see that we've got very high peaks here from the second adjacent stations. And this just wiped out the IBOC. It wasn't possible to retransmit IBOC. So you have to worry about this not only for IBOC, but for analog as well. What's on your adjacent channels, and it's in the same direction, and perhaps even the co-channel, can be a real problem. And now we have the Local Community Radio Act, where LPFMs are going to be considered secondary to full-service stations. Well, they are now, but they're also going to be considered equal to translators and boosters, which they are not now. The FCC is forbidden under the Congressional Passed Act, which was signed by the President, to amend the standard co-channel first and second adjacent spacings. Now, LPFM deals with spacings, simple spacings, and not contour overlap. Some rules were designed to protect the input frequencies of third adjacent translators in the Act, which is great, but right now all translators are protected first, second, and third from LPFM. So hopefully they'll expand that when the rules actually get written. No protection to third adjacent channels. Waivers can be granted for a second adjacent with a showing of no interference. We've been talking about that. There are 3,274 translator applications that are currently out there. These are MX'd, mutually exclusive, and they've been sitting there because the FCC hasn't a way to determine yet which one they should grant, and now LPFM comes along. These are all in markets that are blocking LPFM. And so the FCC wants to dismiss pending applications in these top 150 markets to make room for LPFM. And the Act also said they must perform an economic study to determine the impact on full-service broadcasting. Here's a quick sample of the appendix of the proposed rules that came out about last month. And you can see that the Commission is dismissing basically all these translators in any markets that they call spectrum limited. In the original 2003 window, there were 13,000 applications filed. 4,219 were filed by the same group, Radio Assist Ministries and Edgewater Broadcasting, called RAM. Of those, 1,046 have been sold by RAM for profit. And we're not sure the translator service was ever designed for that in mind. And these are just the spacing tables between FM translators and LPFMs. Translators are divided into three categories of the distance to the 1 millivolt, and then the co-channel distances follow from there. First adjacent follow from whatever power the original translator is. So these translators have to look at the spacings between the LPFMs in protecting them. This is the full service protection for LPFMs to full service. These are the things that the Commission says cannot be changed. So a Class A station, this LPFM has to be on a co-channel at least 67 kilometers distant. And I did a filing for a client, and we said, really, why don't we use contour to contour like we use for translators for LPFM? If we did that, we could find many, many more frequencies. But as you can see, the Act forbids this. And the Act was a compromise between the NAB and Prometheus Broadcasting and the low power and the high power groups. And you're not going to change the Act. So quickly, I want to talk a little bit about boosters. They operate on the same channel, co-channel. They cannot exceed the one or the protected contour, or if it's a Class C, it's the 1 millivolt, Class A, it's 1 millivolt. We talked about those contours that are protected. But a booster can operate up to 20% of the primary station's maximum class power. And we have a case where one station is operating like 600 watts, but it's a Class C2, I believe, or it's a Class, yeah, it's Class C2, something on that order. So the 100 kilowatts is the maximum for that class. So this booster can operate up to 20 kilowatts as long as it doesn't exceed the protected contour of the Class Sea Station. And there's no freeze on boosters. You can go tomorrow and put up a booster for your station. However, be very careful, because boosters can bite the hand that feeds them. They can interfere with the primary station. There are physical barriers, such as mountains, between the primary station and the booster in many translator installations, in many booster installations. They help to ensure success. Boosters in flat areas are generally not successful. Synchronizing a booster, some people think, well, you can synchronize them in a flat area. You can't. You can only synchronize them in certain area, and this next slide will tell you why that's an issue you have to look at. Now, here is a booster that's serving Colorado, downtown Denver. This is a booster for KDHT, and KDHT has a primary service area, which is shown, it's a Class C station, which is shown in red. And this is the booster, 1 millivolt, or 60 dBU, and it obviously falls nicely along the red line, so it doesn't exceed the 60 dBU of the primary station. Now, when we study these, this is a Longley Rice study that's done with PROBE, one of VSOFT Communications mapping and propagation prediction programs. And what we set up in the criteria for this is any place where there was a 6 dB difference or less and a 1 microvolt or a 1 microsecond difference in timing should show up in red. So the areas where you're going to have a problem is where the signal strength from the booster is close, very close, within 6 dB of the primary station, and the timing is less than 1 microsecond. If it's 1 microsecond, it should be okay. Any less than, if you have a 5 microsecond difference between the arrival time, you could have multipath generated that would sound distorted, audio could be distorted. And what we did here in this particular case is we looked at the arrival time. My apologies, this little thing is hard to deal with. At the arrival time of the booster to downtown Denver. Denver's that little red blob there. And the arrival time for the KDTH. The KDTH arrived in 293 microseconds. The booster arrived in 40 microseconds. So we have a difference of 253. So what we do is we delay the booster arrival time by 253 microseconds, which means that then at this particular point, both signals are arriving at the same time. However, where you go to other points, the arrival time is considerably different, and you may get into that area where you are still within 6 dB difference. All of the red shows interference based on this criteria, and that is likely where you will hear a lot of multipath and distorted audio. Maybe you don't care because you're concerned about downtown Denver and you don't care what it sounds like somewhere else. And in fact, some stations have gone to the point of operating the main station all vertical. I'm sorry, all horizontal. You can't do it all vertical. FCC won't let you. All horizontal. And then to operate the booster in all vertical. That gives you, what, 20 dB more of separation. This is a terrain profile between KDHT and downtown Denver. And you can see that the terrain in red has, and this is the direct line of sight, a little bit of bump here, but not much. The Fresnel zone, shown here, does take a dip right in this area, which weakens the signal considerably, and you can see the signal in blue getting weaker. So that's not a very good translator, or good booster. Here's a much better one. This is in Moab, Nevada, near Las Vegas. And the 60 dBU of this station actually crosses Las Vegas. Now remember, the 60 dBU is determined on the basis of 2 to 10 kilometers from the station. So it doesn't have anything to do with what's in between. And in this particular case, if we look at the vertical elevation graph of the terrain, we see that. There's a big hill, and there's actually two hills. And the direct line of sight is interrupted considerably. Not even knife edging is going to happen across that. And so this is a good opportunity for a booster. And in fact, when we look at what they've done here, I don't know if this one is on the, what's the tower, the tall tower downtown that is a hotel? Stratosphere. There is one on the stratosphere. I'm not sure this is it. Here we're looking at the 60 dBU, 1 millivolt of the booster. And here we're looking at, this is a Longley Rice. Now, this is not interference. Again, I have to change the way we're thinking about this because this is coverage. So we have 80 dBU to 100 in the red spot. We have 60 to 80 in the green areas. So you can see, you know, and that's good coverage out here with this desert. But in the booster in downtown Las Vegas, my goodness, we have between 80 and 100 dBU. A great opportunity to penetrate the buildings and to get a good signal in downtown Las Vegas where the people are. This is the interference analysis. Using the same criteria as we did in the last one, 60 dB difference, 1 microsecond delay, and the time delay in this particular case was zero because we didn't care, because we had those hills in the way, so we didn't really have to synchronize it. And in fact, if you look at it, these hills, what you're seeing here are the top of the hills, and that's areas where we do have interference from the booster. A little interference over here, but for the most part, a nice, clean booster in downtown, on the same channel in downtown Las Vegas. And here is another example, and this we're going to have questions after this. This is a situation where the primary station is up here on a hill, and this actually is operating at only 600 watts, but it's way up high, so it has a very excellent coverage. And their interest was in covering a very high residential, high influential, and a money area here in Malibu. But you can see their current signal didn't cover it. If you look at it, we have a gray area there, and that's between 40 and 54 dBU. Just a very poor signal there. And, you know, not a bad signal here over the ocean, but that's only for a few trawlers that are out there. So what we did is we redesigned a little booster here using an antenna that could operate with this is a Yagi antenna that could operate with about 5 kilowatts. And it was pointed not at Malibu, but out in the ocean. Why? Well, here's why. Because now we can see that we have a 80 to 64 to 80 dBU coverage over Malibu. Now, wait a minute here. There's something else going on. Here's your protected contour of the booster, the 60 dBU contour. But it's exceeding the 60 dBU of this primary station. Anybody know why we can do this? It's over ocean. And you can have the overlap over ocean. It's not in the rules. You just have to learn this the hard way. That's why you come to these things. All right, so the big problem, though, is this particular antenna has these wings on it. And it doesn't take too much before you start to go backwards toward the station where you already have good coverage. And you can't synchronize these areas because they're too far apart. So we would have had to use a panel antenna probably rather than a Yagi that had just almost nothing off the back end to make this work. And we didn't have enough building tower to build an antenna panel array. And the money ran out, and we never went any further with this project. But this does show you an unusual situation where a booster would have been able to work if we could only get the antenna to not have these back wings, and we're serving Malibu with a very good signal. So in summary, fill-in FM translators offer us great opportunities for both AM and FM stations. Translator upgrades today are very popular. Translators can be displaced. Waivers are granted for moving more than the minor change amount, more than three channels up or down, or the IFs. Outgoing and incoming interference is an important issue. Translator can run another station's HD2 or HD3 input, and if it's located inside its protected contour, it can become a fill-in with very good power, as long as it doesn't cause interference. The new rules for LPFM may bump many mutually exclusive translators' applications currently on file. A lot of broadcasters are not happy about that. HD translators have been unsuccessful due to interference at the input, as many analog translators have been unsuccessful. New co-channel boosters are not frozen. They work best when there's terrain blockage. They can be synchronized, but only at specific points. And the best boosters will overcome a distant signal with a very powerful signal over a populated area with some terrain blockage. And there we have the presentation, and I've got a few minutes for questions.
Quick one to clarify, the booster ERP can be 20% of the station's ERP or of the class of the station?
Class.
Class, very good.
Yeah, whatever the maximum power for a given class. If it's a Class C, you can have 20 kilowatts. If it's a Class A, you can have 20% of 1,200 watts.
This is kind of a hypothetical. I'm working on this right now for a new station. Can you use a booster to city grade your city of license because you can't obtain a tower site without interference on the site that you originally filed for?
As long as the booster is within the protected contour of the primary station, you are allowed to put it wherever you want. And if you want to, if it shows on a map that you've got city grade with a 70 dBU, and you want to put a booster in, that's fine, but the FCC doesn't care because they're going to look at the original map.
Would the commission grant you a license then for that new station with that booster covering the city?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, there'd be no, but on map, your 70 dBU does cover the city, right? You're not
correct.
Extending that with the booster.
Correct,
Yeah, you're home free. Any other questions? All right, well, thank you very much.